Hey, welcome. I'm Chris Lopez, host of the Valley Pod, where we talk to all the interesting people of the San Luis Valley. Joining us today in our studio on the south side of Alamosa is Sarah Stober, Executive Director of the San Luis Valley Development Resources Group and Council of Governments. Sarah, it's good to see you. How are you?
Good, Chris. Thanks so much for having me today.
Yeah, you know, we wanted to visit about the work you're doing with the San Luis Valley Development Resources Group and Council of Governments because you've really been involved in some significant, interesting, worthwhile projects. And, I mean, I'm going to go through a few of them with you because it's been the work that you guys are doing over there in coordinating. And we're going to have to explain to people here what the Council of Governments, San Luis Valley Council of Governments, does and is, as well as the Development Resources Group. So let's start there. I'll let you start that.
All right. Sounds good. So we'll start with the Council of Governments, since that's where you started also. That group is comprised by a representative from all the jurisdictions from the Valley.
City, county
are all invited. Not everyone attends every meeting, but it was set up to help bring and be a resource for helping the Valley access funding through governmental inroads, so to speak. We're the only organization in the Valley who interfaces with federal, state, regional, county, municipal. So
right.
We can interface, find funding for, and support projects through all those phases of government. And it grew out of a need from the nonprofit side of our organization through the DRG, in hopes and in needs of just supporting government-oriented work.
Yeah, it's not an unusual arrangement. There are other metro regions that operate this way. Interesting that the San Luis Valley has a Council of Governments that you work with and you're coordinator of, executive director. And really, for me, it's like you coordinate, you facilitate, you bring elected officials to the table over projects that they all have a mutual interest in, maybe.
Exactly. And our two buzzwords that we fall back on most specifically are facilitate and convene.
Yeah.
We're asked to bring those folks together to bring the people to the table and then get the work done that they direct.
I don't want to say you're a middle person
We kind of are.
In the orbit of local government here.
We're quasi-governmental.
Yeah. And you get your funding through appropriations of each local government will consider a request to help fund your operations for the year. So that's where you will get some funding, or most of your funding, right, comes that way.
That's correct. So our dues are assessed based on property valuations, current property valuations, and population. Those were the most fair, equitable ways to bring money in to help offset our costs with staff to carry the work forward that Council of Government deems important and asks us to intervene and really carry work to get done.
So let's get into a few examples that you've been working on recently, because again, these are big projects. These are regional, valley-wide efforts that someone along the line said, hey, let's coordinate around this. This is critical. So one of the most recent ones for you, for your group, was an intergovernmental agreement around a joint planning area to protect San Luis Valley water resources, the water of the Upper Rio Grande Basin. You brought together a process that brought in every county commissioner representative, a representative from each county, right?
Yes.
From each municipality in the San Luis Valley.
Yes.
And you worked through a months-long process. I don't know how long it was, Sarah, but you can tell us and give us more insights. But really the objective was to bring all the counties and municipalities into a room, mm-hmm, and to talk through how do we, as a regional area, San Luis Valley, six counties, how do we protect ourselves from someone like Douglas County coming in and wanting to export water out of the San Luis Valley. You take it from there.
Exactly, and thanks for asking about that. Super important work, and very honored to be able to work to protect the water in the valley. As you know, we can't survive as a valley without it. Much of our economy relies on agriculture production, and many counties are over 50% in terms of just how much revenue is generated from that kind of income that's related to water. I can't take credit for the project. Actually, Commissioner Hirsink in Alamosa and their attorney, Mr. Kelly, were involved in a workshop that brought to the surface the need to protect water from export through RWR and others in the future that may come forward. That culminated in a lot of discussions, but I really think that workshop brought a lot of people in the same room. And surprisingly, as a takeaway, each of the smaller groups that were divided as part of that workshop came up with the need for something to protect the valley from water being exported. That idea and of a project coming forward and a facilitator were brought to us through the COG, and we were asked if we could facilitate and convene, work along those lines to see if we couldn't get people in the room to talk through differences, come to agreements, and put a mechanism in place that will protect our thriving agriculture economy for future, not only resilience, but hopefully growth. And that's exactly what we've been doing.
So just to recap where you are with that, I was at an Alamosa County Commissioners meeting last week, a week ago, and they gave final approval at the Alamosa County Commissioner level to the intergovernmental agreement that was crafted through the Council of Governments process. They gave final approval, as have every other county in the San Luis Valley. So now you have an intergovernmental agreement between the counties creating a joint planning area.
Yes.
Collectively, one planning area. And then they move to put in place what are called 1041 planning regulations. Very bureaucratic talk here, very bureaucratic process. But we're trying here to open a window and create some transparency of how government works. And in this case, how local governments across the San Luis Valley all came together under the COG, Council of Governments umbrella, with you coordinating, your staff, bringing them in, working through a draft with all the county attorneys who have their own legal interpretations, right?
Yes.
So you get to a point where everyone gets, that's a good intergovernment. We can agree with that. And they all adopt it.
Yes, they did.
And now they go through very specific planning regulations within their county that aligns to the intergovernmental agreement. Yeah?
Exactly right. And the piece that I wanted to call out is the funding that was created for this project actually came from local foundations and people who support this work.
Interesting.
The Alcalt Foundation is a strong supporter. The Sonoran Institute from the Growing Water Smart Workshop that I mentioned a minute ago. Department of Local Affairs and the Development Resources Group and COG all put money into this one pot to help pay for and retain counsel for this work since it's outside of our scope.
Right.
And we had to get it right. So
right. We
need people that have great track records and experience in doing just that.
Well, we don't know yet, and we probably won't ever know.
True.
Until this gets challenged in a district water court, right? What we don't know is how 100% proof this IGA 1041 local planning regs, how 100% proof that is in terms of protecting the waters of the San Luis Valley and the Rio Grande Basin in the San Luis Valley. We don't know that you put in place will prevent it. We think, based on what the attorneys have written and said and went through that process, that it is a strong barrier to water exportation, right? But until it gets challenged in an actual case, you don't know exactly about the work.
That's exactly true. And the board, especially Commissioner McCracken from Sawatch.
Tom McCracken, yeah.
Yes, very vocal about wanting to make sure that the attorney that was chosen for this work had experience in litigation, not only creating the work and the framework for protecting water from export, but also litigating. And that's why the attorneys that were chosen from the COG, Sullivan Green Seavey is the name of that group, and that's why they were chosen over the others, because they have strong litigation experience.
Interesting. And we know, you know, just on a side note of water, that Douglas County itself has put in place a planning water commission that will advise the county commissioners. That water commission that they appointed includes principals from Renewable Water Resource. So we know that Douglas County and RWR continue in their own maneuverings to try to access and export water from the San Luis Valley. So the move you put in, it's like a chessboard.
Well, it is, and we checked with the Attorney General's office before we started walking down this road to make sure that, because we had no vehicles, so to speak, legal maneuverings in place to protect our water from export, we were ripe for the pickings. And with nothing in place, we were quite vulnerable to folks that wanted to come in and be creative about how they could use our most valuable resource other than air and sunshine.
You know, that's I think that IGA water planning process, what we just talked about, is a good example, Sarah, of how Council of Governments works in a coordinating way. Because without the Council of Governments, because I've seen local officials, it gets a little challenging to bring everyone in, or every county commissioner or every county and municipality, and say, okay, guys, we all got to play nice here. We're all trying to figure something out. But in the Council of Governments format, you are able to bring them in, and they seem to have some already buy-in into that process of a Council of Governments, so they seem more receptive to the conversations, more open to the ideas of coordinating, working together as one valley, really, in this case.
I think you're right, Chris, and I think where water divides us, it can also create cohesion in conversations such as what you're describing. So each of those folks that you mentioned represent constituents from their areas. They are acting in the best interest of their constituents, and in areas where we may have differences of opinion, those can be aired, they can be vetted, they can be challenged, and we can still get work done.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting process to watch. So I'm going to go to a different one now that speaks to not the Council of Governments work, but speaks to the work of the San Luis Valley Development Resources Group, which is the nonprofit side of your organization. You really have two heads, I guess, to what you do. You have the development resources head, and then you have the coordinating Council of Governments head. So let's talk about something you did or your organization did recently under the Development Resources Group umbrella. And that is, during the bankruptcy proceeding of the San Luis Valley Railroad, Rio Grande Railroad, you got involved there when the railroad was running out of money. Weren't sure if they could meet their payroll that was coming up. They're trying to sell the railroad. They're looking for bids, and they need money to pay for their payroll. Council of the Development Resources Group enters that process and lends San Luis Valley Railroad $800,000 so that it can continue forward with operations as it's trying to work its way through a bankruptcy proceeding. Tell us about that.
Interesting, complicated process.
Especially because you're talking about U.S. bankruptcy court proceeding, and they had to you're going to tell us about it, but I know the judge had to approve this loan that you offered.
He did. We came at this particular project really from both sides of our, in quotes, house. And in order to explain that, I'll step back just a moment and explain a little bit about development resources and how it's different from the Council of Governments. Mm-hmm. Because the DRG is a nonprofit, our focus is much different than the Council of Governments efforts on the other side of the house. So where funding from the COG comes from federal, state, local government agreements, typically. Funding for projects such as this comes from economic development with an eye towards job creation.
Gotcha.
So when we became involved, it was initially to help counties recoup some of their back taxes from the railroad. As time went on and the bankruptcy matured and developed on the federal level, there was a need, as you said, for keeping their payroll intact. Over 250 people were being threatened with losing their jobs last year. So part of the money that we receive has federal ties. It's appropriated through the state. We lend that money for businesses who are either expanding or starting up here in the valley to create jobs, to give them a leg up. We like to call ourselves a gap financer because we don't compete with local banks in that arena. What we do is partner with them to strengthen their files and mitigate the risk that local banks has, because we bring in money that typically an owner would have, even though not a lot of business owners have a 20% investment to put down just at the drop of the hat. So that's where we can come in. In situations with the railroad, those jobs are so important to maintain that these funds actually that we were able to lend were COVID relief funds that we had received and would have been returned to the state had the need for the railroad not arisen. And it perfectly fits our model. We very much hope that we will be paid back at least in part, and we do secure our loans with collateral as any financial institution would. However, the state understands also the importance of maintaining the jobs in the meantime and found the priority to be job retention at that time. So we will receive some return on that investment and hope to forge a strong relationship with the new railroad owners and have done so far.
Well, it's not too far of a stretch here, Sarah, to say that Council of Governments Development Resources Group, the Development Resources Group, it's not too far of a stretch to say that your organization helped save the railroad. I mean, without that $800,000 at the time, because I was following the bankruptcy proceedings, and he was hurting. The trustee for the bankruptcy was definitely in a tough spot in terms of meeting their operating costs as he was trying to close a deal to sell the railroad. And I don't know, he had too many places to turn to at that point. And so when the Development Resources Group stepped in and made that loan offer, and you did get paid back. I mean, that was, I think, one of the terms you made, maybe, and you can tell us if I'm wrong, you haven't got paid back yet, but you will.
We hope that we will.
Yeah.
The final proceedings have not been completed on the federal level. And so while many of the counties have been made whole, I am told, not all of the creditors have been made whole or paid back yet, and we have not.
And you were in one of the first positions of getting paid back once that transaction went through, I recall.
Yes, as a creditor after the counties.
Right.
Which is as it should be.
Right.
Counties should have been paid back for those back taxes first and us further down that list.
So I think that's a good example of how you work in this case to help save jobs in the community.
It is, Chris. Yes, thanks. We don't typically like being in a first lien position. We like being in second or third because that's truly supporting the efforts of the first lien lender.
Yeah.
The person who's really going out in front and putting their neck on the line. We want to support their work. We're not in any way here to compete with that. But we do want to see job creation. We want to see growth. We want to support new business expansion and those things that are really hard to do in rural.
Yeah. No, it's interesting job that you're doing, interesting work. We've talked about two examples of the work that you do. We're going to talk a little bit more when we come back. This is the Valley Pod. We're going to take a quick break.
Climb aboard the Cumbres and Toltec Scenic Railroad. The Cumbres and Toltec operates on a 64 miles of track between Antonito, Colorado and Chama, New Mexico, taking passengers over the San Juan Mountains to the Conejos Valley. Regular daily passenger service begins June 3rd through October 21st and will run 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. Book now on America's highest, longest, and most authentic steam-operated railroad. Visit our website at CumbresToltec.com.
Hey, we're back. We're talking to Sarah Stover. She's the executive director of the San Luis Valley Development Resources Group and Council of Governments. We're learning about how that group operates. Sarah, before we talk a little bit about some other projects, some interesting, I mean, you're interesting project and critical projects, infrastructure projects. Tell us a little bit about you in terms of how long you've had the job, where you came from. Are you a Valley native? How'd you come into this work?
Great question. There's a lot of questions inside that question, Chris, but I've been with the DRG a little bit over 10 years. Came into the executive director role in January, but prior to that, I spent 20-some-odd years in finance and banking, investment banking, so a lot of moving parts to that kind of work, which I feel prepared me well in terms of knowing how many moves, knowing how important it is to place it correctly, to strategize and use it to really strengthen organizations. Throughout my tenure at the DRG, I served in multiple capacities, but I began in residential finance and expanded to the commercial finance arena when I joined the DRG, just from a desire to want to get into that, learn more, challenge myself. And there is quite a learning curve in that. But super, super satisfying to work with folks that have a passion for bringing business, new businesses to life and expanding on concepts that they already have that may just need a leg up or a little bit of working capital to get things off the ground. So that's about me. I grew up here in the Valley when I was early elementary school. My dad had a sheep ranch here in the Valley, and we ran several thousand head of sheep up by La Garita.
So interesting.
I grew up in that area for several years and then didn't do so well with a lot of the coyote population taking what wasn't theirs, we felt. And moved back about 13, almost 14 years ago.
A really interesting backstory there. You know, one of the things that's interesting, too, about the work you do in the Council of Governments work in particular, and the Development Resources Group at the Council of Governments, and that is the person in your situation, the executive director, that's you, there has to be trust at the local government level in that person to then want to get involved with the convening, coordinating thing. Because my reading or my watching of Council of Governments in other places and here locally is if the person that's running the Council of Governments doesn't have the confidence in the local officials or the local officials doesn't have confidence in that executive director, they're less inclined to participate or get involved. That's just my observations of watching how this works, and I've seen this work in other municipalities, other metro areas. So to your credit, there seems to be a lot of confidence in your abilities to convene, to tackle big projects like the IGA with 1041 in the water. I mean, that's a big project, a big process. So there seems to be a lot of confidence in your ability, Sarah.
Thank you, Chris, but I can't take credit for that. We have amazing people that we work with, our staff. They work hard day and night, long hours. Local government officials, county and municipal, they're hardworking people. They have the true desire of their hearts is to lift and elevate this region, to create a vibrant economy. And in order to do that, we have to be able to talk through tough spots. And I feel we're in a very unique position in that people who are in the room can disagree with one another, can find ways to resolve those differences of opinion, and still work through those processes. That's a gift. That's a gift and a credit to all the people in the room, and certainly nothing that I had to do with it. So,
well, you know, another hairy proposition on your plate is renewable solar energy development, building more transmission capacity. And I say that's a hairy topic because that's before the Colorado Public Utilities Commission, which is in its own an interesting bureaucracy, the CPUC, that not many people actually follow or really get deep into. But in this case, with the Colorado Public Utilities Commission, in the San Luis Valley and solar renewable energy and generating more solar power, and then the challenge of transmitting it, not just locally, but getting it out to the state of Colorado. That's now something that you're working with. You're something that's on your plate. Tell us about where you think that is.
Well, again, to back up a little bit, Commissioner Lori Lasky brought that project to us. She had done the legwork and stopped by the Colorado Energy Office, had meetings at length with several people there. What happened is the Valley experienced the Marshall Fire. The power outages from the Marshall Fire created a lot of not just inconveniences, but in some case, health crises for people. Right. Elderly that didn't have power and heat, people that were on, you know, respirator, people that needed oxygen, things like that. And didn't have that ability for more than we heard initially. It would be a couple of hours and turned into 8 or 12 hours of an outage. That made people start thinking, what do we need to do to be more self-sufficient? What do we need to do to protect ourselves in situations like this? So we were put in touch with a couple of folks at the state level and were asked to, again, convene the Council of Governments membership and ask for their support, in terms of addressing the Public Utilities Commission and asking them to take a closer look at how we can strengthen the power that comes into the valley. Right now we have one area that the power comes over Poncha Pass, and if that goes down, if there's a forest fire up that direction, and that's our main energy artery, we're crippled without that.
You know, I want to kind of inject here why it's important from a state viewpoint to have a regional council of governments, which we do here in the San Luis Valley. And the reason that it's important for you to be able to convene and bring all the counties, county commissioners, municipal government people around the table is the state of Colorado, the Colorado Public Utilities Commission, or really any department out there, likes to spend money or support areas that have a regional cooperation to them. If they look at the San Luis Valley and they see, oh, Alamosa's trying to do this by themselves and they don't really have support from Rio Grande County or Conejos County or Costilla County to do what they're trying to do with this, or vice versa, Rio Grande County is trying to do this, but Conejos, and it is really important to send the signal north to Denver and to Washington, D.C., that we are coordinating our together and coming up with solutions as a valley, not solutions as Alamosa County, not solutions as Costilla County, not solutions as Sawatch County. We come together as one county. That's, I think, Sarah, the magic of what you do or try to do. and why it's important. Because if you come at it six different counties, six different ways, the state tells you, see ya. And it's not just the state. Foundations, they look at you and say, can I do work in this region of the San Luis Valley across the counties or not? Is there a group that helps me coordinate my project across the valley, or do I have to go do this county to county? That's where you come in and say, no, we are coordinated. Am I right?
Exactly right. And you couldn't have put it better. If I were an investor looking to make a large, say, infrastructure investment with the largest impact, I'm going to want to go to a group like what you just described, because anything else is going to be fractured, and my chances of a single impactful outcome are much less to a degree than if I have a group of people working together, pulling that same wagon up a hill, so to speak.
Right. You know, this is not unusual. I worked in the Denver metro area. I worked at the Denver Post. I saw this in Denver metro area. They have a Denver Regional Council of Governments, Dr. Mm-hmm. Cog, just Cog. Like you do.
Yep.
And they do that for the exact same reasons you're doing it, to access bigger pools of money, to access private enterprise that wants to come in and bring a project into a region. Same thing when I worked in El Paso, Texas. Mm-hmm. Paso del Norte region, that's the difference there, is it's two countries. It's Juarez in El Paso coordinating regionally and then adding in Las Cruces, New Mexico. So you end up with two countries and three different states, but they do the coordination the same way you do it and for the same reasons, to get that power.
To bring the money.
Right.
To build the infrastructure, to
right.
support the lifestyles,
right.
to not only create a situation where we're status quo, but we have a vibrant community, a group of people that want to be here, who value the lifestyle and values that people have, and are willing to, at times, put their differences aside, work through challenges, to bring those resources down. That a lot of times, those regions that you mentioned, inner city, they don't understand the challenges of being so far away, of having to transport goods into and out of a region that are highly valued resources, the potatoes, the produce, many of the things that we produce here in the valley. Those transportation costs are enormous. What can we do to help those people? How can we help them create a stronger enterprise? That's the work that we do.
Yeah, you know, we're going to keep seeing the solar redevelopment, the transmission capacity process play out at the Colorado Public Utilities Commission level. We know that the Council of Governments is going to be involved. We're going to be talking about this years down the road, Sarah. I want to talk about something a little bit more urgent that you're working on, and that's housing in a regional housing project. Because we've talked before with Don Malgaris, San Luis Valley Housing Coalition. We understand and know the need for housing across the valley, not just in one community. The Housing Coalition study showed that. What's the work that you're doing, your group's doing now with regional housing?
Well, as you mentioned, so many individual groups were working on housing in their specific area. In Monta Vista or here in Alamosa there, or up in Sawatch, many housing projects are fractured, and what we're hoping is to create a single framework. This isn't going to cure all of the needs for the valley, but if we can address the workforce housing needs as a united group, and you've mentioned before the importance of bringing resources when bound together by a larger group with a single mission at heart, I think we can bring a lot of resources down to the valley in this project. I feel that those individual projects that, say, Monta Vista and La Jara and Center are already working on can be strengthened if we can join forces to bring some of those federal funds down that are now being made available. So that's our hope with the regional workforce housing project. We're going to need to rely heavily on those organizations throughout the valley that are already working on the workforce housing needs here, and ask for their coordinated effort and input and help. We're not the experts. We don't do housing, and housing isn't an economic development outcome. So for some time, many people wanted to argue that housing shouldn't be a discussion that an economic development organization was engaged in. However, the thing that we kept seeing was larger employers in the valley losing potential employees, people they were recruiting for key positions, such as physicians at the hospital and things like that, were being offered positions that they were not able to accept because they didn't or couldn't find housing that was suitable. So it does become an economic development issue when employers can't find help, can't hire people for key positions because they can't find housing. So we have seen a trend lately in new businesses that are starting up in the valley to provide housing for employees and work that into the model they're creating, because they already know that housing's going to be an issue. So build in some on-site housing, just a few key employees to address that need and make sure that those positions are shored up to make sure that the organization can move forward based on the business model.
Interesting, no doubt. There's, you know, what's interesting about the housing puzzle is there's needs across the spectrum, not just one level of price of housing. I mean, we need housing. There's a demand for all income levels, it seems like, even to what you're saying about the recruitment of physicians who can't find a house, so they take a job somewhere else, those types of things.
But the thing that's so common, when we look at the demographics of the valley, often people are living in, say, Lahara and driving to Center to work.
Right.
Why is that? They can't find a house in Center, but their job is in Center, so they're going to live in Lahara because they can find housing there.
That's another thing that your organization does really well, which is track these types of trends. Who's commuting, what that commute's like, what communities are seeing it, what are the reasons for that. I mean, you have a rich collection of different data like that.
We do. We do an in-depth study every 5 years called the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. The acronym is the SEDS, and that document lives on our website. On the years that we're not compiling that in-depth information, we want to give the community information that, say, nonprofits can use to apply for grant funding based on population, income levels. And so on those off years from producing the SEDS, we do what's called a statistical profile. That was just created the end of April and also lives on our website. That's a more recent but pared down version of the SEDS, just to give people an idea of current trends, any updated information that may have shifted over the past year and on the years in between the more in-depth SEDS work.
Yeah, I've looked at some of that data as it comes out, and, you know, I'm kind of a data geek to begin with, but I got to say that we'll have to have you back in here, Sarah, so that we can just have a conversation about the demographics, the different data trends that we're talking about, because there's some really insightful information when you look at the demographic data, when you look at commuter data, when you just look at it all, and you really see an interesting picture of how the valley functions and operates. And I don't know that people they're not that attuned to it like we would be.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, we'll have to have you in here and we'll talk a little bit more about that. We've really enjoyed our conversation this morning. I think we've learned a lot about the San Luis Valley Development Resources Group and the Council of Governments and all the really important and interesting work that you're doing. It's a fascinating group, and we thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you've been listening to the Valley Pod and our episode with Sarah Stober. The Valley Pod is produced by Owen Woods and is part of the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. We'll see you around the Valley.
Hi, I'm Marty Jones, host of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. Join us every other Wednesday as we talk to outdoor enthusiasts, wildlife experts, recreationists, lovers of the outdoors, and people who spend their days and their lives outside. On the Outdoor Citizen, we talk all things outside and outdoors, provide you with the latest data and measurements for water and weather, give you upcoming outdoor events, and keep you up to date on the latest news. The Outdoor Citizen is brought to you by the AlamosaCitizen.com podcast lineup. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, enjoy the out of doors.